And here we are. This is the seminar, Agelessness, lecture number 3, here in Campo, California. My universe is my fun place in which I live. I am myself, and I have fun under all circumstances. My emphasis is on being myself. I understand all in that framework of laughter, fun, is that which is pleasurable and fulfilling. So, my universe is my fun place in which I live. Where do you guys live? Do you live in your universe, which is the fun place? Do you live in a universe which is filled with great ideas and great activities, doing wonderful things? Or do you live in a universe that's filled with all sorts of problems that need to be solved? Well, whatever is the case, it's your choice. Your choice of whatever you want. One route leads to age, and the other route leads to agelessness. If you want to worry about the world, worry about the people in the world, worry about even your husband, your wife, and your children, and your people, your dogs, and your cats, then you got problems. But if you place all in divine order, then you have no problems. Now, what is one of the things of being young that we are often aware of? Being young is not having a worry in the world, not having a care in the world, not having a worry in the world, not having a care in the world, not having a worry in the world, not having a care in the world. That's what being young is all about. Now, do children think to tell their mother and father where they are or where they're going? No. They know where they are. And that's all that matters to them. Do children think of telling other people what they're doing? No. When children get mad at each other, what's the first thing they do? They get over it. And they don't pay any more attention to it. They let it go. And as soon as they decide that that's enough, they say that's enough, and then they go play. And they don't really care. Adults make a vendetta. They make a long-lasting problem out of life, and because they make long-lasting problems out of life, they get old. They age. Children, well, why do children age? Children age because of a very unhappy situation. Children age because they have parents. If children didn't have any parents, you see, there was a Star Trek program about children, and it was a world in which there were no adults, and the children always remained children. But there were the older children who made rules, because they felt that the rules had to be there. And they said that you had to go to bed at night. They said that you had to eat your meals. They said that you had to brush your teeth. They said you had to do things. Now, you say, well, certainly those things were important. Brushing your teeth, going to bed at night, eating your meals, and all such things, that's important. That's very important. Why? Why? When a child is hungry, he goes and eats. I enjoyed watching Mariella's children over at Switzerland, Ellen's grandchildren. When they come home from school, they immediately go to the refrigerator. And they raid the refrigerator, and they eat everything they can shove down their faces. And they're not bad children. They're just eating because they're hungry. And then, after they've eaten, then they go and get something to drink, and usually soda water or anything else that they can figure out. And then after they've done that, then they go back to the refrigerator and see if there's any ice cream, or they go to the drawer and see if there's any cookies or anything else. You see, that comes in order. And if they find any cookies, they eat them all, or as many as they can. And then it's time for supper. And when it's supper time, the kids eat what they want. They have no requirement that they must eat anything. And if they don't like it, they don't have to eat it. Basically, they don't eat anything. Basically, the food that comes on the table is the last thing that gets eaten. Now, I'm not saying this to tell that her children are badly raised. I'm saying this to tell you that those children are raised basically without a care in the world. They're raised without a lot of unnecessary discipline. They're raised with a great deal of love. They're raised with a great deal of compassion for doing what they want to do. And they do it. And the parents join with them in playing the games, in eating and doing the same thing. And the parents are young. I mean, they're in their 40s or whatever it is. And they're young. They're very young people. But they're young people because they don't care. If someone comes over and says, "Mario, I want you to come with me. I've got a problem here." Mariella says, "In a while." "But it's important. In a while." "But Mariella, don't you understand? You have to come with me because I tell you, you got to come with me. And I'm running this show. You got..." Mariella says, "Please go home." Mariella is not fazed in the slightest. Now, is she a senseless, careless, individual who has no concern about other people? Sure. She loves other people, but she doesn't feel that other people should rule her life. And her children are the same way. They don't feel other people should rule their life. Now, another thing that these terrible Arnoldi children do, their mother calls them to come and eat. And they come when they're ready. You say, "What a miserable household to be in." Well, that's what your household was. Your household was a miserable household if that's what you expected. Because if you expected your children to come and eat when it was time to eat, and they didn't come, and then you were unhappy about it, and you got all your tension and all your anxiety up. Wow, did you age a lot each time they didn't come to the table when they were called? Did you age a lot each time the things didn't go your way? Wow, did you age? And just look at you now. You're just a squeakling nothing, Really? And Mariella? Untouched. Now, is Mariella running a bad household? Is she running a household where the children don't behave? No. She's running a household where the children do the things that they feel is important for them to do and or are important, and they do it and they're happy, and there's no tension in that household. There's no anxiety in that household. There's no feeling that everything's going to pot. They have a daughter who looks just like Princess Di. Gorgeous girl. Gorgeous, gorgeous girl. She's 13 at the time. And she was gorgeous. And she wore these little tiny skirts that didn't cover anything, And then she had a little tiny blouse that didn't cover anything, And she went to school like that. She went to school looking like a whore, And we thought to ourselves, wow, At least us who were brought up to behave. And Mariella raised those children with such respect for themselves that they could not be violated or touched by any other person or thought, because they lived their life in such integrity and such honesty and such purity. They like themselves. They don't have tension. They don't have tension. And this girl, she is now, 15, 16? And she has a 18-year-old boyfriend, or 22-year-old boyfriend. And he's working in a bank, I believe. And he's very successful in stocks and bonds and all that kind of stuff. Very successful financial counselor. Really an amazing young man. And he wears a suit. This kid wears a suit and a tie, And it's so contrary to what Mariella's children do. They're just all casual dressers. And but that young man is a gentleman. That young man is respectful. That young man would not do anything to that girl that she didn't want done. And she chooses to live her life in a harmonious, beautiful way. And by her choice, by her choice. Her parents don't have to worry about her. She will be a well-orderly girl for herself because she is content. She's not running around with anxiety. She's not running around with aging capacities. You see, all those children are so absolutely unfortunate. Every one of them is super blessed with the ability to be a genius in sports. Every one of them. Every one of them is a super genius in every area of their life. Now, the father would come home from work and he would spend a half an hour with each child every night. Five children, each child, going over their homework, going over their things, saying, anything I can help you with, anything I can work with you on. Now, here's how I do it, and this is lots of fun. And all the children are great. All the children are great on the computers. All the children Now, what I'm trying to say to you is, they are fantastic without the tension. You see, most families raise their children with a rod. Spare the rod and spoil the child. And they are afraid to strike the child. Who's afraid to strike the child? Do you think that Mariella and her husband spanked the children? No. Why don't they? They don't have to. Because they don't have a bunch of silly rules in that household that have to be followed that don't make any sense. But you learn balance, you learn values, you learn... No, you don't. Values are something that you learn because you like yourself, not because you don't like yourself. And we teach values because we don't like ourselves. We teach, I want you to make us proud when you go to the neighbor's house, that you dress nicely and you eat nicely and you have good manners and so on. Well, the older boy, he's always had a bevy of girlfriends. And one year when he was 16, 17, he and his buddy went out and bought a rose for their girlfriend. But each of them bought over a dozen roses because they had a dozen girlfriends to give the roses to. And they gave the roses to each of their special girlfriends. Now, you say, my goodness sakes, well, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? And now the boy has two girlfriends, and one is the daughter and one is the granddaughter of the richest man in Switzerland. And they both know that he loves them both, and he hasn't decided, you know, what to decide. They're both friends. One gives him their Mercedes, brand new Mercedes to drive around in. The other one gives her brand new motorcycle to drive around in and do whatever he wants and all that sort of stuff. And he goes over and eats with the family and he's a member of the family. He's part of it. I mean, he's not stupid, you know. Brilliant. Now, those young people are going to remain young all their life because they don't have a bunch of false images that their parents have put upon them. You've got to study. You've got to do your lessons. You've got to clean up your room. You've got to put your clothes away. You've got to respect your brothers and sisters and mother and father and stuff like that. Well, the mother and father are respectable. The children don't have to respect them. They are respectable. The mother and father don't go out honking around with other men and women and sleeping with other men and women around town and stuff like that. They respect their home. They love each other. As a man and woman, they are so happily married, so happily in love, they don't need to go out and look for sex elsewhere. They have it at home. They have a happy, harmonious sexual life. And they have a good family life. They love each other's company. And he sometimes goes to work in Zurich and is there for a full week and sleeps in Zurich and lives in Zurich. And she doesn't see him. Is she worried about him? Ha! She knows that he's the most magnificent husband in the world, and she is the most magnificent wife in the world. They don't have to worry about it. They don't say, now don't go honking around. Don't go do things that you shouldn't do. That's stupid. That's stupid. Why would they say something like that when it has no application? You see, we teach these things to our children. When you get married, honor the marriage vow. The marriage vow says, do not have to take anyone else as in a relationship while you're married, you know. Do not do that. Well, that's a stupid thing to say. That's a stupid thing to have in a marriage vow. The marriage vow should be, do whatever you want to do. Do whatever makes you happy. If this is your wife or this is your husband and you find them to be the most satisfying people on earth, then why would you want to find somebody else? So when are you going to find them to be the most satisfying people on earth? When they find themselves to be the most satisfying people on earth. And that's only when they are raised to delight in themselves, to enjoy themselves. This is what little children do before they're the age of 3 or 4, maybe 5. They play in the sandbox. And if their friends come over and play with them, that's fine. If their friends don't come over and play with them, that's fine. That doesn't bother them. And if the friends want one of their toys, they say, sure, take it. Can I keep it? Sure. You know, they are not possessed. They are not threatened by the rest of the world. They remain young, dynamic, wonderful children all their lives. And this is what you can do. You can start right now. You can start right now shedding all of these old attitudes that your mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and your teachers and your ministers, especially your ministers. My God, what a bunch of fools those people are. Can you imagine a minister telling you to worship Jesus and to worship God and to live your life in such a way that Jesus is going to be proud of you? Well, if you're not proud of yourself, having Jesus proud of you isn't going to be much good, you know? And, hey, the church is good, religion is good, but when it starts to tell you what kind of a being you should be, it's like your mother and father. They don't know beans. They don't know beans about how you should be. Now, Ingeborg, don't answer me, but how should you be in your life? You should be happy. You should be fulfilled. You should think that you are a wonderful person. Well, somebody sat on you someplace along the line, and we're going to get them off of you. Because you have a feeling that you're not as good as somebody else, and that is stupid. You are as good as everybody, and you are the best that there can ever be. And the same with Dorothea here. Dorothea, she goes around overkilling herself, saying, I'm wonderful, I'm fantastic, I'm good, and I'm this and that. And all she has to do is be that. She doesn't have to go telling anybody that. And the thing is, when you start telling people that, you're saying that you really aren't good, you aren't fantastic, you don't believe in yourself. And this is the same with Ellen. Ellen, from when she was a little girl, she'd go around telling people that she's a leader and she's directing the show and she's this and she's that. And all the rest of the kids said, hey, if she wants to be that way, that's okay. I don't care. Doesn't bother me. She's nice to play with. I'll just play with her. If she wants to be the leader, she can be the leader. But being the leader brings problems. Being the leader brings problems because if anyone gets the blame, it's you. And no matter whether you taught them to do it or not, if they did something in your presence and around you, and that was naughty, you get blamed because, you know, you're the leader. And who wants to be the leader? Be the leader of yourself. Be so beautiful in yourself that everything you do is a joy to you and everything you do makes you feel good. But if you think that someone should have done something and they didn't do it and you are unhappy about that, what a silly attitude to have. Who gives a hoot and holler in hell, you know? Who cares? Well, this is what we have taught ourselves, is to be concerned about other people. Ellen rather, Sylvia and Ingeborg oftentimes rat on each other, and they say, Sylvia did this, or Ingeborg did this, or Sylvia did this, or Ingeborg did this. And I said, don't ever tell me anything anybody else did, because if it's bad and I am supposed to find out about it, I'll find out. But don't you be the one who tells me. Don't any of you ever tell me anything like that, because it's not what it's going to make you feel bad. Oh, it makes me feel good because I said on that or I did. No, it doesn't. It makes you feel bad. Because inside, your gut just hurts, and you think, I hope she gets it good, you know. And that's, you're angry with yourself. You're angry with yourself. And this is what you're taught by your parents. This is what you're taught in your world. When I was a kid, and my little brother was a little ratsky, and he would always rat on us, on all four of us, and we didn't do anything. He's the one who did it. And then he'd go and say that we took my dad's cigarettes, and we took my dad's bottles of beer, and we didn't even drink or smoke or care about the stuff, but he did, and his buddies. And he'd put the blame on us so that it would not be on him. Well, my dad finally figured it out after a few years, what was going on. But we didn't care. We got a spanking for doing things we didn't do. And so what? We just thought, Howie, one of these days, your comeuppance is going to come, and that's your business. We're not going to tell on you. We're not going to tell on you, because the moment we tell on you, then we're just as bad as you are. Just as bad as you are. And you see, this is a lesson we learned. It was a lesson we learned because you sort of want to be nice to your little brother. You want to be nice to the baby brother, even if the baby brother is a little bum, you know. But you see, if you don't have that in your family, and all you do is have your mother or father who are talking about the neighbors, who are talking about other people, who are gossiping about people, who are belittling other people, you know, then that's not very nice. And you learn to do that. And then you learn to take on the ills and pains of other people. What is a politician? A politician is somebody who likes to take on the problems of the world. No. What is a minister? A minister is someone who wants to take on the problems of whoever he can get a hold of. You know, whatever people, whether his congregation, if his congregation aren't bad enough, then he takes on the other congregations, you know. Then he belittles them. And if the minister should be leading us to our divine self. Jesus says, go within to the Father. Go within, go within. And what do? We go outside. We go outside. And then when we go outside, we say, oh, gee, isn't that too bad? You know, my goodness sakes, why is it? Why is it the world's going to pot? Why is the world's going to hell in the basket? You know, why is it? Well, that's because we don't pay attention to what we've been taught by the master teacher. Now, would you say that what Jesus taught would be perhaps superior or greater than what your parents might have taught you? Well, should have been. What did Jesus teach? He taught love. Love your neighbor like yourself. And if you have anything against your brother and you want to pray to God inside of yourself, you go to your brother first and you say, hey, brother, I'm sorry, and let it go. Don't ask him to forgive you. Just say, I'm sorry. And your brother may say, what did I do? what did you do? Why are you sorry? I don't want to tell you. don't build it up. And then go and meditate and tune in to the divine within you. You see, we don't know how to do this. We don't know how to do this. Why is it? Now, answer me this question here. And this question comes about not in the first 10, 12 years, or maybe 13 years, about the break is about there, but it comes about after the 13th year on up, that children, when they study, they have to have loud music on. You know, loud as can be, destroy their eardrums if possible. Why do they do it? Because they are turning off the outer world. They are running away from their parents. They're running away from their teachers. They're running away from everything in the outer world. Children go down the street with their boombox on, you know, so that everybody's got to listen to their boombox. Or they have their headphones on, and they're rocking. And then you drive by a car, and the kids are sitting in the car, bouncing up and down to the music, this hard rock music. And you think to yourself, oh, wow, you know. Now, they're not bad. They're not bad. They're just of a generation who is seeking to run away from all of the nonsense that their parents and the world has been teaching them, the dualistic attitudes that the world has been teaching them. It says, go and kill the Huns, kill the Japs, kill the whoever, you know. What a terrible thing to do. And then, as soon as the war is over, then you do business with them. You know, they're not Huns, now they're Germans. They're not Japs, now they're Japanese, you know. And they're industrialists, they're businessmen, you know. But we teach that. And we not only teach it, we teach it again and again and again. I read you an article. It was about a man in Afghanistan who offered to pay for each American that was killed. Every American that you kill, somebody kills, he would pay you. And so a dentist in Australia said, that's interesting, but how are you going to find an American? An American is one who wants freedom for everyone. American is somebody who wants to have harmony. American is one who helps his neighbor. He is the greatest, Americans are the greatest givers of donations to causes of anybody in the world. And an American is from Australia, is from Switzerland, is from Germany, and named all the countries of the world, and Afghanistan, and Iraq, and Iran. And the Americans gave more to help the Afghanistan people than any other country in the world when they had been overrun by the Russians and they were trying to get back on their feet. Now, who is this American you're going to kill? Who is this American? And you see, that article was in itself an absolute abomination, but it did point out that if we would just love everybody and just really appreciate everyone, we would find that this world is so filled with beautiful, fantastic, glorious people that there's no one to fight against. There's no one to argue with. There's no one to feel that you're in tension and anxiety over. And the little children, if they have a fight with somebody, the next day they're their best buddies again. You know? And the little children, if they take something and they hit somebody with it, you know, they don't feel bad. They don't want to kill you. They say, stop it! I'll throw my truck at you. I'll cut your legs up. And they don't think it's going to cut your legs up. But I'll throw my truck. Get out of here. Don't do that. And they will not stand for any type of tension. They will not stand for any type of violation of these things. And really, we have much to learn there. Not that we should retaliate with violence, but the retaliation with violence is things that they see at home. They see that at home. When the little boy comes home and he says, Johnny hit me, and Johnny took my bike, and Johnny, well, why didn't you hit him back? Macho Daddy says, you know, why didn't you hit him back? Kick him to balls. Put him out of business. Hurt him. You know, my goodness sakes, have you ever heard anything so gross, so evil? And that is what parents teach their children. That's what parents teach their children. Do you know what some of the lesser parents teach their children who are living in a society where younger children have a lot of sex? They say to their daughters, if you don't want to have sex with somebody, tell me you got AIDS. What? Tell me you got AIDS? You know what that means? That means you're putting it in your consciousness, and sooner or later, you're going to have that. And you don't want that. You just say, no. But you don't act in such a way that you invite their request. You don't act in such a way that you invite them to come and violate your rights as a human being. But you see, parents don't teach that. They say, fight your way out of it, you know, bang your way out of it, argue your way out of it, kill your way out of it, you know. You girls, you carry a gun, somebody comes and tries to violate you, shoot them. Or get this pepper gun, you know, shoot them with a pepper gun. Do whatever it is to protect you. Oh, get karate, you know, get judo. My goodness sakes. Who needs to protect themselves with violence? But this is what we teach our children. And you, each one of you, have taught your children that. Each one of you have watched a TV show or a movie in which there was a violent thing going on and the evil man was killing people or hurting people or doing terrible things. And you said, kill him, kill him, kill him, stop him, you know. And this is what we teach our children. And that's what we have been taught. And so we have grown up with all of this violence, all of this tension, all of this anxiety. And then we wonder why tension is one of the greatest killers of human beings on the face of the earth. Tension. Just tension itself. Because we live in this type of a universe. Now, we make a statement to you. Say it. Say it. I am. I like me. I am divine order. I am peace. I like me. I'm divine order. I'm 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 peace. Even with this tough saying, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Even saying it so rough like that, it still is peace. I like me. And because I like me, all the world likes me. And it's true. I am divine order. Everything in my life is in divine order. Everything in my life is harmonious. All my relationships with myself, my family, my friends, all of my world are divine order. Divine, and hey, just happened to think, everything in my life is divine order. My body is in divine order. How about that? Isn't that a nice one? My body is in divine order?
Of course.
Of course, you say of course, but do you say it and mean it without me getting after you to say it?
Yes.
You see, that's the point. This should be something that is so ingrown within it. And all of your children, all of your husbands and wives and all of your friends and all your neighbors and all your relatives of every nature, you go to them and you say, I like me, I'm divine order and peace. And they say, what got into you? And you say, nothing, but I like me. And you know, Jesus said, what did he say?
Love yourself.
As you love yourself, and as you love yourself, so you love your neighbor. And what did he say? It is done unto you according to your belief. And he said, whoever is without sin, let them throw the first stone. And none of the people could do it. Because they all had some little hang-ups, some little fault. But you see, we have these beautiful teachings, these beautiful non-violent teachings. Non-violent teachings is so wonderful. And if we start putting it to work in our life, then we conclude with the word, I am peace. And when we say, I am peace, what we have done, we have created for ourselves one of the most glorious adventures in the entire universe. Ellen, it's a world without tension when you're at peace.
Right.
Gertrude, it's a world without responsibility when you're at peace. You know? The kids are always doing the right thing. I mean, are they always doing the right thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And your children are the greatest kids on the face of the earth. when you are at peace with yourself. But when you're at war with yourself, you see every damn little rotten thing about you in them. You see, anytime we don't like ourselves, we see ourselves in other people, and then we say, why are they so terrible? And that's because we're hung up. That's because we got problems. You understand that, Sylvia?
Yes, I do.
And we don't need that. We don't need that. Do you have the greatest son in the world?
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Dorothea, I'm not going to ask you about your mother and father.
All right.
Because all you'll tell me is that they're the greatest mother and father in the world. And do you love them?
Oh, indeed.
Why do you love them?
Because I love myself.
Because I love myself. And that's the truth. If you didn't love yourself, you couldn't love your parents. Mm-hmm. Now, what does Ellen talk about her mother about? Yeah, what does she talk about her mother? She's always talking about her mother and her diabetic chocolates. She has said that now 8 or 10 times.
You told me today to say it.
I didn't tell you to say it. I said, now what about your mother? Now, what should you say about your mother? My mother is the most healthy, fantastic woman on the face of the earth. She lived until she was 94. What was her exact age? Quick.
94.
She lived until she was 94 in a wonderful, healthy body. She had a daughter that was hanging on to her, that was giving her a little bit of a hard time, but what?
Yeah.
Not
me.
No, it's another daughter, too. And this other daughter was just waiting for mother to die. Now, she wasn't unkind about it. She let mother live however she wanted to, but she was just waiting. She stayed as close to her mother as she could so that she would inherit all the property if at all possible. And she did. And that was beautiful. But to see now that daughter has all that money. She has all that goods. She lives in a very modest home. She and her husband do not travel. They do not do anything with it. They do not give donations to any organizations. That money is just sitting in the bank there, growing by itself, and they have no joy out of it. They got what they wanted, but they didn't know how to enjoy it. Now, you see, the trouble was, Marlis's mother and father never taught her how to spend money and how to receive money and how to use money. And so they never used it. They never did anything with it. And the same with Ellen. Ellen was raised by that same penny-pinching mother and father. They had lots of money, they had lots of good things, but they were afraid to use it because they had come through the war, they had come through depressions, they had come through all these things, and they were afraid they might lose it and then have nothing. Well, they could lose it very easily. You know how? Just like the governments have done from time to time, they said, that money is now worthless. Anybody who owns property, you got something, but the money is worthless. And so whether you got in the bank, whether you got in stock, whether you got in anything, it's worthless. And that happens.
Yeah.
And so when you hold on to things too much, you find out that it's worthless. Mm-hmm. And when you're possessed by things, you find out that you haven't got it. Well, Ellen, with her largesse, whatever it was, she grew and she expanded and she found her spiritual consciousness. And you know what she did? She left her mother and father behind. Loved them, but left them behind. Left them as a memory that isn't much remembered. She left her husband. And she wanted to walk her spiritual path, and she left her husband. And her husband says, okay, that's fine if that's what you want to do. You know, I still love you, but whatever you want to do. And she loved him, but she wanted to walk her way. Now, it took a lot of courage to do that, because all of her friends said, you are crazy. You are crazy leaving your family, leaving your husband, leaving your world. You are crazy walking your spiritual path. You are crazy to look within yourself and seek within yourself the peace and the love that is there. You're crazy because they were raised by families that you don't do such things. You don't do such irrational things. You maintain the status quo. My mother, unfortunately, did the same thing to me. I had a church in El Centro. I was at the United Church of Religious Sciences, the associate editor. It was a nice post, but not a lot of money. And she says, "Herb, you've got it. Hey, stay there, stay there, stay there." And I said, "No, I can't stay there. I have to always be expanding and sharing and loving and being myself." And so the church themselves sent me into great, wonderful opportunities where I was able to earn a great deal. Just for Saturday and Sunday, I earned $1,000 each week. Just Saturday and Sunday. And then at the United Church of Religious Science, I earned something like $800 for 6 days, 5 days of work. And then I went up to Minneapolis, and I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay in El Centro because I was having a great, wonderful time there. I was getting $2,000 a week there. And so I went up to Minneapolis, and what they gave me was my seven-story house, a mansion with a swimming pool and all that good stuff, and right on the lake, and a big, beautiful church, and a big, beautiful outdoor amphitheater, and a big, beautiful little pond, and a glass guest house that my sisters and family always came and stayed in. And I had the entire house. Across our living room was five chandeliers bigger than these things here hanging, you know, so it's a big old living room. And then they paid me $100,000 a year, and that was back in 70. And then they gave me my Mercedes 450 SL and all these other good things. They did all these things because they wanted me there. And they wanted me to run their organization for them, which I did for a couple of years. And finally, I told them, "No way. I'm doing your show. I'm not doing mine. And that's not what I want to do." But you see, the thing is, my mother would have said, "Herb, you are crazy not to stay with that. You know, I mean, you've got it made, you know. The President of the United States was only earning $100,000 a year that year, you know. I mean, what's wrong with you? You some sort of a stupid person?" And then I married my niece there. She came up and the whole family, and had a big wedding there, a big indoor-outdoor wedding. It was glorious. That was Linda. And super, super program. And you see, all these things are so wonderful, but the thing is, if you're attached to them, if you're tied to them, what happens? You don't grow. And you don't have fun. You don't have fun. And you have to always have fun. I always had the latest electronic equipment, as you can imagine. And I had the microphone that you pin on here, and the little battery operation here, and then my remote control here and there. And I would wear this thing, and I'd go and talk to people, and I'd give my talk, and I'd forget to shut it off sometimes. And I'd go to the bathroom. And people say, "I know what you're doing." And then I'd be talking with people. "Have you got that thing shut off?" "Oh, no, I don't." But you see, I always had fun. I always had fun. And wherever I went, it was fun. And this is the thing to do. This is the thing to do. Let the tensions go by. Let the anxieties go by. Let the worries go by. And do not be concerned about anything that goes on in your world except to be yourself and have fun. And if your values in being yourself are such that you are an accepted person by the society you're in, well and good. If your value is that you're not accepted as a good person by the society you're in, move to another society. You know? Why do people live in Florida on the hurricane path? They like it down there. It's kind of exciting. Why do people live, you know, in dangerous areas? Because they like it. Why do people live in secure areas? Because they like it. You know? You can move into the Midwest of the United States, and it's a very secure country, but they get a lot of tornadoes there, too. I mean, you can have anything you want. Minneapolis was just loaded with tornadoes, and I was up there, and during my time there, I was about three years, there was no tornado in the entire state the 3 years I was there. I don't like tornadoes. I don't create tornadoes in my world. And that's the truth. And then when I left, oh my goodness, Edith Mary was still there living in Minneapolis, and she said, oh boy, we are Tornado Alley. They're going through here just like they are running out of style, you know, and just having a wonderful time. And that was great. But you see, when you only have the values of liking yourself, being yourself, and having fun, then everything you do is great. Now, that's what a child does. That's what little children do. They like themselves, they be themselves, and they're having fun. And that's all that matters, is to like yourself, to be yourself, and to have fun. And if you do it any other way, then there's tension. Then there's anxiety. Then there's hang-ups. You will find that your body will be responding to everything that you think, say, or do. And if you think, say, and do happy things, your body will feel very good. When you think, say, and do unhappy things, things that are filled with tension, filled with anxiety, then your body will not function properly. And this is true. This is true. I've seen so many people who are angry, 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 and then they have all sorts of problems in their body, and they say, why me? Well, you're angry. And they say, well, what can I do about it? And I say, well, first love yourself, and then forget everything else. Love yourself and be yourself and do whatever pleases you, and you won't have them anymore. And, well, yeah, Bob, but that. And I work with them. I work with them very closely. And as I work with them very closely, they get rid of their anxieties, they get rid of their tensions, and boom, the illness is gone. The illness is gone. Now, you say, well, why don't you do that with me, Herb? I mean, I have anxieties, and I have tensions, and I have illnesses. I can't do it with you, because I've offered to do it, and you don't want to do it. You will not stop doing the silly things you're doing that are making you unhappy. You will not stop arguing with each other. You will not stop having anxiety with each other. You will not stop saying bad things about each other. It's silly. Really silly. Now, why? Why don't you stop? I got a right to be angry. You know, I got a right to be angry. These things just aren't going my way. I got a right to be unhappy. You know what I mean? Well, yes, you do. You got a right to do anything you want and enjoy it, and to grow old and old and old and decrepit and unhappy. And you've all seen the film Dorian Gray, and you've all seen how he had that painting in his closet turn into the most angry-looking man in the world, and he was the most beautiful-looking man in the world, a very licentious man, and he went into the closet and saw the picture and was so upset with it, he stabbed the picture and cut it to pieces. And in the process, he killed himself, because the picture was himself. And all the evilness of the picture turned onto him. You see, that's a story, and that's a symbolic story. It has a lot of pointed meaningness to it. But the thing is, that's what we are. That's what we are. When we are not like our childlike self, and we're not like the innocence, that's a good word too, the innocence of youth, that is really tough. Now, how long can children remain innocent? Only until their family, friends, and parents tell them otherwise. Lydia, when did Santa Claus leave your house? Yeah. When did Santa Claus leave your house? When did you start telling your children there was no Santa Claus? Or when did your children tell you there was no Santa Claus? When they told you there was no Santa Claus, you would say to them, oh, don't kid yourself. there is a wonderful Santa Claus. And that Santa Claus uses your mommy and daddy as agents, you know, to bring you presents, to bring you good things. But there is a Santa Claus. There is a spirit of Santa Claus. There is a spirit of this. There is a spirit of God. There is a spirit of Jesus. There is a spirit of truth, a spirit of love, a spirit of the Easter Bunny, a spirit of the Tooth Fairy. Yeah. And hey, they're real. They're real. Did you ever wake up in the morning with a quarter under your pillow and your tooth missing? Well, I sure did. I had about four or five of them. And it's wonderful. I don't think it was a quarter at that time. I think it was a nickel. But it still was good. It still was good. I earned a nickel for sweeping the sidewalks. And for I earned a dime for walking the dog for 7 days a week. Every day I take the dog out for a walk of the neighbor. A dime. You know, that was a lot of money. But you see, it's not the size of the coin. It's the size of the illusion, the size of the symbol. And we don't want to take these symbols and throw them away because life is too much fun. And when we throw these symbols away, what we have done is we have thrown our youth away. We have thrown our childhood away. And how many men do you know who are little children yet? Not too many of them, but some are still little children. How many women do you know who are still little children? Well, somebody's got to have intelligence and sense around the family here. No. Lots of women who are mothers and who work with their families, and they keep up the symbols of joy, the symbols of the Easter Bunny, the symbols of these things. And you know what Lydia would say? Lydia would say, "Boy, Herb, you sure went crazy on that one. You got the Easter bunnies all over your yard here. You got them by the hundreds." Well, just think what they did in Australia. They brought in a couple of little Easter bunnies, and those Easter bunnies populated this Australia and ate it up. But hey, that's cool. That's cool. You see, these are things that we are doing. Now, are you ready to go back and be a child again? Are you ready to have that innocence, that joy inside you, that innocence that says, hey, all is okay? Or are you the kind of person who says, there's a problem, and we have to work on that problem? Well, it all depends on what's right for you. Think about it, because life is just wonderful. Now, my universe is my fun place in which I live. We'll take a pause now, and we'll come back, and we'll say, my universe is my playground. And are we going to have fun on our playground?
Thank you.